How many of you guys remember Woody Boyd, Woody Harrelson, and Cheers doing The Pursuit of Happiness? Do you guys remember that? If you weren't a Cheers fan, that won't mean anything to you, but I can't hear that without thinking of that. Because the Old English, where they, if they did double S's, they wrote it as a double F, and yeah, there you go. That was free and meaningless. Anyway, good morning. We're glad you're here today. I got a quiz for you. So if you have a piece of paper, grab it, take it out. You're going to be answering questions on a sheet of paper. And if you don't, well, you'll have to make up the answers or just see if you can figure them out in your head. But we got a series of questions for you that we want you to kind of participate with this morning, all right? So get yourself ready. This is, you know, a test that is, I guess, pass-fail. Heidi knows about that. We went to Bolivar yesterday to do a test. She wrote for 4 hours straight, and it's a pass-fail exam. Well, this is what this one. You either get the questions right or you don't, and, there's, like, no prize at the end or anything like that. We should have had candy, but oh well. All right, here we go. First question. Are you ready? Who was the valedictorian of your graduating class? And if you graduated this year, or if you're in high school, who is the valedictorian of the class, your class this year? So who's the valedictorian of your graduating class in high school? And like I said, if you're still in high school, who is the valedictorian of the class? If you don't know what the valedictorian was, you probably went to tech school. All right. oh, that was mean. All right, second thing. What was your great-great-grandfather's first name? What was your great-great-grandfather's first name? All right, next question. Who won the 2002 Super Bowl? Who won the 2002 Super Bowl? You guys got that? All right, next question. Name a Nobel Prize winner from the last 2 years. Name a Nobel Prize. No fair, going back to Nelson Mandela or something like that. Last 2 years. Name a Nobel Prize winner from the last 2 years. All right, next one. Who spoke at your college graduation? If you didn't graduate, okay, just make somebody up. Daffy Duck. Who spoke at your college graduation? All right, next one. Who was the Democratic vice presidential nominee in 2000? Who was the Democratic vice presidential nominee in 2000? How you doing on the test? All right, next one. What movie won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 2006? All right, and the last one, who's your alderman or alderwoman? All right, did you get them all? How many of you think you got at least 5 right? You think you got 5 right? I'm going to look at your test at the end and see, all right? How many of you got 1 right, maybe? I know which one Heidi got right. Heidi, who's a valedictorian of your high school graduating class? I wanted to validate her this morning, make her feel good about herself, all that kind of stuff. She graduated magna cum laude. I graduated, oh, thank the Lord. Let's see, some of these. Anybody get the 2002 Super Bowl winner? I think that was the year Patriots beat the Rams, wasn't it? Any Nobel Prize winners from the last 2 years? Oh, yeah, that's right. He did win the Nobel Prize. Not going to comment on that because, yeah. Anybody get who spoke at their college graduation? I remember Heidi's. I don't remember mine. I remember Heidi's again. Roy Blunt spoke at hers. Academy Award for Best Picture in 2006. What was it? Say it again. The Departed. That's right. We didn't do too well on this. Anybody get their alderman or alderwoman? Wow. They spend so much money to put signs in your yard, you don't even remember who they are. That's amazing. You know, this morning, we're looking into the pursuit of happiness. We're dealing with the book of Ecclesiastes, these first couple chapters. As Solomon, the author of this book, is trying to talk to us about, really, I mean, the book is kind of how not to do life. The whole thing is Solomon is letting us know that he's tried it all. His life story is that as a young man, he really honored God. He had a great dad who was a godly guy, but was very flawed, but he was a godly guy who spoke into Solomon's life that he should love God with all his heart and trust him. Let God be his vision. Is that this last song that we sang just really connects with this whole series, really, because David really spoke into his son's life, Solomon's life, saying, this is the way you ought to live life. Pursue God, love him. Life will connect, it will make sense. But as Solomon grew older, he kind of started out that way, but as he grew older, his life as a king, a guy who had it all, became a life of pursuing everything. And I don't think it's like one day he went, I love Jesus, and the next day he went, oh, forget that, I'm gonna go after everything else. I think it's little subtle things in his life that build up over time as he makes the decision, I'm gonna try to make sense of life by pursuing happiness. I'm gonna try to pursue the things that will make me happy while at the same time kind of holding on to God. And it's almost like all of a sudden at the end of his life, he just kind of wakes up and goes, where'd he go? It doesn't resolve anymore. It doesn't connect. I'm distant from God. And the Bible actually tells us that as he grows older, he had all kinds of wives and all kinds of issues, and they began to pursue other gods with his life. And at the end of his life, he writes this book. And I really believe that this book is kind of his repentance, his way of saying, I don't want you to make the same mistakes that I made. I don't want you to fail and pursue the things that I thought would make me happy. And so we're looking at it's several different issues. There's different lanes that people will tend to run in as they pursue happiness. And the ultimate answer to all these is that everything that we're gonna look at, they are good things. There's nothing inherently wrong with achievement that we're gonna talk about this morning. But the problem is that we tend to make achievement the main thing. We tend to say, man, if I can just accomplish this, or if I can just show somebody the trophy that I won, they'll think I'm kind of cool. And I'll tell you the day that it really hit me that achievement is fleeting and short-lived and vain. I went back to my high school as an adult, and I walked down this corridor outside the gym. There's this big sign there. And on that sign, my name is actually still on that, okay? I still hold a couple pitching records at Brentwood High School as a pitcher who played high school baseball there. And, you know, when I was there, that was just, you know, I thought I was the coolest, the best thing. And I was standing there looking at that, and there was something on the inside of me that felt like people ought to walk up and go, hey, you're that guy. You had all those records. And all they could do is look at me like I was some old fart who was there taking up space in our hallway and making them feel weirded out. And I realized that name, nobody stopped and looked and went, wow, I wonder who Mike Hubbard is. He must have been really cool. You know, he must have been like the best thing coming. And it dawned on me that name on the board, while it made me feel validated and cool, really didn't have a whole lot of meaning beyond just my own little weird sense of pride. And that if that was what I penned my hopes and dreams, which when I was in high school, man, it was. That it was fleeting, it was short-lived, and it really didn't have the value to other people that it should have to me. I sit around listening to Tim Russert's stuff, and wow, 58 years old, he's at work, and just like that, boom, it's over for him. And I don't know if you watched stuff. I actually really liked him on TV and liked watching his news shows and listened to his political commentary. In fact, he's one of my favorites of watching just political commentary. Listening to the people late night, as I was laying in bed, just watching the coverage of people who were kind of dealing with the first shock of his death, and people just talking about how great he was at what he did, what a great guy, all these wonderful things that nobody ever really stopped and told him, but now everybody's talking about him, and we all hear it, but there's one guy who didn't. And accomplishments, achievements, pursuing after that as kind of the be-all to end-all. We just kind of did an exercise that showed you we don't remember this stuff. We don't live in it. We don't, but boy, we want people to remember our accomplishments. We want people to see our trophies. We want people to validate who we are. And there's a sense which, in a very real way, we pursue the accomplishments of life feeling like somehow that will make me a better person or more of a person or a whole person. I will find worth and hope and purpose and joy or whatever it is out of accomplishments. And what we're going to find this morning from the passage, and I think you will resolve, I think you will resonate with what, in fact, I think you'll resonate all the way through here, through the book of Ecclesiastes, as we hear Solomon say, man, maybe accomplishment doesn't leave the inner hope and joy that I thought it was supposed to leave. There's got to be something more to live for. So if you have your Bibles, turn to Ecclesiastes. We're going to be reading out of chapter 1. If you don't have a Bible at the end of your rows, we'd love for you to pick up one of those, read with us. It'll be on page 469 in that Bible. And we're going to read out of Ecclesiastes chapter 1 as Solomon is talking to us about just kind of the pattern of life and the toils that we do, the work that we do, the accomplishments that we go for, and why that won't fulfill. And the thing I want you to start thinking in your mind is a couple things. First of all, what past accomplishments, what life trophies do I have in my life that I still look to as that which I want to hold up in front of everybody so they will validate me? I mean, I find myself doing this a lot, especially in sports. If you're a sports guy, you'll get this. You want people to think you're cool and good. And as an umpire, I'm just going to be real honest with you. It's amazing. Some of you know I got the chance to go work a pretty high-level baseball game. And I'm not saying that to go, look at me. I'm using this to explain something. I actually got to go do the state baseball finals this year for the high school baseball. Very few umpires get a chance to do this. It's a once-in-a-lifetime deal. It is a validation as an umpire of the fact that, you know, somebody thought I was okay? I say that to tell you I find myself all the time wanting to get up in a catcher and say, hey, I worked the state baseball finals. Or to tell a coach, hey, because I know sometime during the game they're going to see a pitch that I call and they're going to go, where was that pitch? And I'm going to turn around and go, hey, I worked the state baseball finals. Leave me alone. I want to hold up a trophy that validates me. You see what I'm saying? What is that trophy for you? And in your mind, what have you set up in your mind is, if I could just accomplish this, I'd be okay. What is the achievement that you are pushing yourself towards? Maybe it's retirement and you don't have a nest egg. Maybe it's a certain house. Maybe it's something in your job. We all have these things. What are those things for you? And then listen to Solomon as he speaks into those issues, all right? Ecclesiastes chapter 1, we'll begin with verse 2. And he says, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does a man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south, and it goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they will flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing. The ear not filled with hearing. What has been is, and what has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new. It has been already in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those who come after. Now, the first thing I got to tell you is that Heidi kind of gets on me every once in a while that I'm not a good public reader. I like speaking, but when I read, I don't have great inflection. And I just really stunk that up because this is a poem. You need to understand this right up front. Let me just give you a little, this is kind of, I'm going to step to the side and talk about interpreting the Bible. It is important when you read the Bible to interpret the type of literature as the type of literature it's meant to be. Poems are not science texts, okay? You don't, write a poem that says, I love you with all my heart, and hope that somebody says that you're thinking about your blood bumper, okay? It's poetic. As we read this, Solomon says things that aren't scientifically connected. Like the earth remains forever. We know that the earth had a starting point. We know that the earth has an ending point. It's not his point. He is speaking poetically. This is a poem. It's prose. It's something where, you know, it should be read with this flowery British accent, you know? And you ought to feel what he says more than you think what he says. And so as I'm talking about it, as somebody who's very cognitive, I'm real cerebral, real a heady guy, feel the poem. Feel what he says as you see in the third, fourth, and fifth, and sixth verse, the monotony of life. Don't miss that. And wrestle with, you know, the things that we do. We live in a culture. I mean, we kind of started last week talking about the fact that in the Declaration of Independence, our founding document, we're promised this pursuit of happiness. And it's almost like the American founders put something in our founding document that damns us. Okay? Because we feel like we have this God-given right to pursue something we can't catch. It's what he says. He starts off by saying vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's the idea that life is just a vapor. You breathe and it's gone. And he says everything is vanity. And he said, what does it gain a man for the toil that he does under the sun? And that's the big question that kind of is going on with this morning as we talk about this. Verse 3, he says, what does a man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? We talked last week about the fact that under the sun is a pretty big phrase in Ecclesiastes because it refers to life in the created realm, and that ultimately the call of Ecclesiastes is to help us look beyond that and to realize that there is kind of a sixth sense, the sense of faith. Of trusting God, of finding God, of experiencing life in a spiritual dimension. But as long as I live life only in the five senses under the sun, that it's toilsome and it's vanity, it's broken, it doesn't work, it's frustrating. And what Solomon is talking about now, the question is the toil that I do, the work that I do. When I'm, you know, what do I work for? I work to achieve. All the work that I do is I try to be a better me, as I try to get more out of life, as I try to, you know, hold up my trophies and run towards better things. All that stuff done under the sun, what he starts out by saying, listen, that's all vanity. It's all vanity. We live in a world where it is in the DNA of our culture. I mean, it is so deeply ingrained into us from the crib. Be all that you can be. I mean, the army has caught a slogan that is kind of the battle cry of our world. And so it's everywhere. I mean, you go to school and your parents, if you'll just get A's in school, and you begin to press to achieve, and you feel like, man, if I just do better in school. And sports is all about this. I mean, here we are this morning, and I feel massively guilty. I look around and see a lot of dads, and where are they? And I'm not speaking against this, okay? Because I scheduled a tournament this weekend. But kids are playing Father's Day tournaments. Why? So some team can hold up a trophy and say, look, we're better than everybody else. And some kid can say, man, I got 8 hits all over the sports. Everything about it is wired to achievement. It's wired to have this sense of, man, be better, be the best you can, go for the gusto, just live your life. And we create these images in our mind where we start saying, well, if I can just do this, or if I can just be this, if I can just be better. We watch TV, and all of our, like, reality shows are based on this. Every, you know, they're just popping up everywhere. Every type of, you know, there's a cooking reality show where everybody's trying to be the best cook. There's a, you know, a home improvement reality shows now where a bunch of people, you know, come up with ideas where they design rooms, and the winner's going to get, you know, their own show. There are reality shows everywhere, and YouTube is the king of this, right? Because the whole goal of YouTube, I mean, it started as, hey, you can post your videos and people will see it. But the real heart of YouTube are people who want to be famous for putting something out on video. And now they're finding people who are putting stuff on video that ought to just make us blush, but it's making them famous. And everywhere we look, everywhere we are, there is a sense in which this pushing for achievement is everywhere. And what happens is it kind of gets it gets ingrained to us. If I can just get a 28 on my ACT, if I can just get a 30 on my ACT, if I can just get a 32, if I can just get a 3.5, if I can just draw that picture and get somebody to say it's okay. And what happens is that inside of us, and we don't even know it's there, there is this very deep, very real sense that we set up achievements as the ultimate validation of self. We all do it. It is in our culture, and in a very real way, it is what the definition of the pursuit of happiness is all about. And so you ask people, would they rather be rich or famous? Probably 75 years ago, the answer would have been rich. In fact, I guarantee you, around the Great Depression, nobody cared about fame. They needed money. You ask that question now, I think most people are going to say famous, because they say, listen, I want the culture to say I'm awesome and remembering my name validate me. And what my point is this, I'm telling you, this is me and it is you. Wrestle with it and deal with it and hear from Solomon this morning. As we read this, he gets down and he says things like, there will be no remembrance. And we said, well, yeah, there are people who remember. I want you to say this is coming from somebody where if you were walking around his town, shrines to the greatness of Solomon were everywhere. All right, here's Solomon, okay? Solomon becomes king and becomes so rich that they stop counting the silver. True. We'll get to this more next week or the week after that as we talk about wealth. But they just stopped counting the silver. There was so much gold that they didn't have time to, so they just made piles. Everything he built covered in gold. And he built, not only that, he built the religious, the most important religious place on the highest mountain in Jerusalem. So as you're walking around Jerusalem, the capital city, the king has now built the temple. It's sitting on top of this mountain. It's glorious. It glistens because of all the gold, all the white marble, all the great cedars from Lebanon that are built. It's an amazing place. And people see it from everywhere. And everywhere you look and you see the temple, you think, wow, Solomon built that. What a guy. And then you turn the other direction. He has built an unbelievable palace. This place that is just massive, and it is the shrine to his greatness. The dude had ships. The Bible tells us that he had a whole fleet of ships. He had, like, you know, the Solomon Love Boat or the USS Solomon. You know, he had built a fleet of ships, which in that day was something that hadn't been done, you know. He had all kinds of boats. Everything. He had chariots. He had bought chariots from Egypt, and they had brought all kinds of chariots. This guy, everywhere you turned, if you went to the sea, Solomon. If you'd walked through the streets, Solomon. If you looked up on a mountain, Solomon. This guy had achieved it. But something goes on, and there's sometimes as you read the Bible, you got to stop and pay attention. And sometimes where chapter headings are, you got to stop and realize that the original author didn't put chapters in. And there's sometimes the Bible's really sneaky and subtle about things. And I want to show you one of these places. Turn over with me to 1 Kings chapter 6. I didn't write down the page for this, so you have to flip. It's kind of to your left, probably, 100, 150. What is it? 245. 1 Kings chapter 6. I want you to see this. Now realize, the building of the temple is the most glorious day to this point in Israel's history. This unbelievable place. They had worshiped in a tent for 400 years. And now there is a permanent building, and it is phenomenal. And look at this. Chapter 6, verse 37. In the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid in the month of Ziv. I have no idea what month that is, but we'll move on. And in the 11th year, the month of Bul, once again, don't know, which is the eighth month, the house was finished with all its parts according to all its specifications. He was 7 years in building it. How long did it take to build the temple, the place of worship, the house of God? He had people working on it around the clock, all kinds of people, 7 years. This is one of these places where you shouldn't have a chapter heading, because the author wants you to flip over and see verse 1 of chapter 7. where it says, Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished the entire house. Did you see it? Did you see how already early in his life, when Solomon was building a house for God, that he already was building a greater name for himself? That already in his life, there is something on the inside of himself that says, I need to validate me. I need to have the best and the biggest and the one that people are most awed at. I'll build God a great house. But I'm 13 years, we're going to work on mine. And what happens is Solomon gets to the end of his life is all these achievements. And he says, verse 4, a generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Sun rises, the sun goes down, hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south, goes around to the north, around and around goes the wind. And on its circuit, the wind returns. All the streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they will flow again. This is what he's saying. Poetic language, this is what he's saying. He said, I believed I was the guy who would have the sun stop and take notice. I thought I was the guy who I would stand up and the generation after me would just keep looking and going, man, you are awesome. We look to you. I thought I was the guy who could harness the wind and could catch it. I thought I was the guy who could catch the power of the stream. But as an older guy, he says, but I found that the wind doesn't stop. It just keeps blowing. I have found that the sun just rises and sets. There is this monotony of life. And all my accomplishments didn't stop it for a single day. There is a flow of the river, and it just keeps flowing into the ocean. But the ocean never gets full. And a generation comes and a generation goes. He says, we're like people on a treadmill. You jump on a treadmill. You ever go to one of these exercise places, you get on a treadmill. And some people walk on the treadmill. They're just walking. Some people are jogging. Some people are putting their head down and running with all their might. But here's the truth. Two truths about running on a treadmill if you go to the YMCA. Truth number one, somebody is waiting for you to get off that treadmill so they can take your place. And truth number two, at the end of your running, you've gone nowhere. That's what Solomon is saying. He's saying, man, I don't care if you run fast, run slow, if you walk, but somebody is waiting for your treadmill saying, hey, old dude, get the heck off of there. It's my turn. And when you get done, you're going to look around. You're going to be in the exact same place you started. There is what accomplishments get you. And the first thing he really says to us, the first thing he kind of announces to us is that my achievements are never enough. They don't catch the wind. My achievements, straight A's in school, are not going to stop the water from flowing into the ocean, and it's not going to fill the ocean up, and it's not going to stop the sun. My trophies, my achievements, my accomplishments, all that I feel like validates me, that makes me more valuable, more worthy, more wonderful, it's never enough. It is never going to bring something that brings things where I ultimately feel what I want to feel from them. And this is how we flesh it out, okay? We flesh out the sense of accomplishment in so many ways. Like I said, for some of us, there is a sense in which we just want to show the trophies of our life so people will see them. We just want to hold up our accomplishments and say, look at this. I won. I accomplished this. I did something. Don't you know that makes me somebody? I have a name for myself because I have a trophy on my wall. Or we look forward. If I could just pull this off in my life, I would be okay. If I could just get that promotion at work. If I could just get a better job. If I could just pull this off. We all have those things. Or what happens is we see it in our kids. This is why a mom looks at her son and says, do you have clean underwear on? It's not because we really care that he has clean underwear. It's because we know that if he gets an auto accident that day, that they're going to check it out and they're going to know that his mom did not put him in clean underwear. And they're going to think about me. And so we start living vicariously through our kids, okay? We start feeling like our children, I didn't accomplish. And oh my gosh, I got to tell you, as an umpire, As somebody who's running tournaments, I watch these dads who wanted to be athletes. They wanted a trophy. They wanted validation. They wanted somebody to say, you are cool, you are awesome, but they never got it. And they push their kids because now they think, if my kid can just do this and have this. And I'm telling you, after working with teenagers for 20 years, I've watched kids who are really good athletes quit when they were sophomores in high school. A lot. Because they're just burned out from it. Because we push our kids, and all of a sudden it's not, I really want what God wants for you. I want the best. It's, I don't want people to look at me and think I'm a goober because of the way you act. See, I want validation. I achieve, but now I'm achieving through my children. Or the other option is that we put on black and we have this dark anti-achievement. You know, these are people who like, they want to shop at Hot Topic and they want to, you know, listen to this dark music that just says, you know, it's all bad. We're all Marilyn Manson fans and, you know, just, you know, David Goodman, I love, he's got a pin he wears around that says, all you nonconformists are just alike. Love that pin. Anyway, we become a nonconformist and we reject the whole accomplishment idea. But see what that really is that's way of rejecting it all so I can validate me. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. I want to feel validated, and I can't quite get there, so what do? I reject everybody else's achievements as worthless. Makes me feel good. We all play this game. It is so deep in our soul, so deep in the system of who we are, we don't even see it. And Solomon says, we run like a person on a treadmill. We run, you may walk, you may run. Somebody's waiting for your treadmill, and when you get done, you're gonna be in the same place. Nothing's gonna change. Because your accomplishments are not enough. If that's what you want to fill your life, you're going to find, just like he did, because believe me, you ain't going to outdo the dude. You're not going to end your life going, hey, I had more accomplishments than this guy. Not going to happen. And he's just letting us know, hey, it's not enough. Second thing he says is, my achievements are nothing new. Look at verses 9 and 10. What has been is what will be. And what has been done is what will be done. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it can be said, see, this is new? It's been done already in the ages before us. In poetic fashion, he's, now realize that we read this in the 20th and 21st century now, and we say, but hold on, this, our world is not like his world. But you need to understand, this is coming from the mouth of a guy who brought more change, technological and building change to his world than anybody before him. So he can't be talking about iPods and computers and, you know, as my wife tells me about her grandma one time telling her that she went from horse and buggy to man on the moon. Of course, there's, I guess, for some of us still a debate over whether that really happened, but that's a different issue altogether. We've gone from, you know, we're driving around with horses to now change is so fast that change is just part of our culture. And to that, how can Solomon say, well, there's nothing new? But see, here's what happens. All that stuff, iPods and airplanes, they're trinkets. They don't really deal with the issues of the heart. But what we think, we start thinking, if I can just achieve, and so we create whatever it is. I mean, boy, if I just had the new iPod or iPhone, I mean, it, for real, I mean, I do this, okay? When I get a new piece of technology, do you see yourself playing with it? Not so much because you want to play with it, but so that everybody sees that you have it. Like checking your, kind of pointing it to people so, you know, they know that you have the coolest, newest technology. There's nothing new. It's going to leave you empty. It's not going to fill the place. It's not going to lead you to depth. It's not going to answer the great questions, and it's not going to solve the problem that one day we are no longer going to be here, and that is going to be passed to somebody else who's going to throw it in a drawer somewhere. Nothing new under the sun. It's nothing new that takes place. And this monotony of life and the fact there's nothing new is just frustrating. Because if we live for those things, There's just this rhythm to life, but that rhythm is always flowing to something that we know is out there. And all of a sudden, those accomplishments that we thought would validate us just don't really do it. And the last thing he says is this. He says that my achievements will be forgotten. My achievements will be forgotten. Look at verse 11. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those who come after. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. Nobody's going to remember. I mean, a generation from Solomon, nobody's going, that's Solomon's temple. It's just the temple. And yes, in a culture where fame is a big deal, we do remember some people. But there's not many. But really, even the people we remember, we don't remember the people. All we remember is how their name is connected to some accomplishment. But you don't remember the inner heart of the person. You just remember what they accomplished, and all of a sudden, the accomplishment is bigger than they are. But there's no remembrance. You know, there's no sense of real deep value in the fact that there is something out there with your name on it. Because people, even if you get that, even if you pull off the fame, even if you end up with a great video on YouTube or you win American Idol or whatever it is, if people remember you, they're not going to remember you. All they're going to remember is what you're famous for, which is empty. They're not going to care about the brokenness in your heart and the struggles that you have and the pain and even the difficulty you went through to get to the point where you were. But for the rest of us, let's be honest, the legacy is your kids, the few people around you, your church. I mean, how many people got their great-great-grandfather's first name here? So if you're living for that, if you're living for a trophy on the wall, for an accomplishment, it's a vapor. This is why he says vanity of vanity. It's all vanity because when it's over, it's a puff of wind. It's a vapor. There has got to be something more. There has got to be something that we're living for that has greater meaning, greater value, greater issue. And this is where the gospel comes in. We talk about Jesus every week. We talk about the gospel every week. And here's the deal with Ecclesiastes. I mentioned this last week, that Ecclesiastes raises the questions that the rest of the Bible answers. Solomon is going to help us with some of those answers as we deal with it, but not in this text this morning. Boy, it's a hard text. I mean, it's a poem. Like I said, it ought to be read with somebody with a British accent who reads it very poetically, and it ought to be beautiful, and it is. But you get to the end of it, you don't feel very good about your stuff, do you? We kind of want to throw those trophies in a box. But then what do? Is the answer no accomplishment? That we'll just, you know, we're not trying. Everybody gets D's from here on out. Some of you are like, yes. Going home and saying that to my mom. See, Mom, all those A's that you pushed me so hard for, they're worthless. It's vanity. I don't think Solomon ends there. I don't think the Bible ends there either. I don't think the Bible is anti-accomplishment. But here's what happens. This is what we do with everything. We take good things and make them the main thing. And then we take the things that we make the main thing and make it about our name. And this is what the gospel does. The gospel, Jesus comes and pays the price for our sin, which that's idolatry. It's what we're doing when we make accomplishment our life. And let me just say it again. This is so deeply ingrained in the DNA of our culture and who we are that I really believe one of the challenges this morning is all of a sudden I take a step back and I go, oh, whoa, I need Jesus because this is so me. Okay? And Jesus dies on the cross as the one who takes on our sin to take our place. And he offers us the cross. And watch this. The cross as the ultimate accomplishment. And that's what it means to live the Christian life. It is dying to self. It is laying down everything and running sometimes headlong into brokenness and persecution and suffering that Jesus offers as the greatest accomplishment. That is so backwards. And what's going on in the church, I gotta be honest, in the Christian church is that we've just Christianized accomplishment. We do a lot of talking about what I have to offer God. And we don't realize I don't have my accomplishments for God, seriously. That temple, Paul eventually in Acts chapter 17 says, our God doesn't dwell in temples, and he doesn't need anything made by human hands. God isn't up in heaven going, wow, what a good job they did on that temple. Now, that doesn't mean that wasn't part of his purpose. But the deal is that our accomplishments, God is not applauding in heaven. Let me tell you what God is applauding. He's applauding the cross. He's applauding the fact that Jesus died as the ultimate accomplishment and that we are to run to that. And in the cross, Paul says, I boast only in the cross. I make my loudest boast only in the cross. I don't boast about me. In fact, my favorite passage of scripture in the book of Philippians chapter 3, Paul lists all his accomplishments. He's doing this for a purpose. Go read it tonight. Philippians chapter 3, he lists his accomplishments. He shows us his trophy case. And he says, listen, let me explain what this is. He said, I count all this as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. And the word rubbish there is a cleaned up word. It is crap. Literally, the Greek, I read it out of a text. I can't quite say it from here, but it is literally the Greek version of the other word we use in our culture for that word. It is the most debased, vulgar word for human feces. And Paul says, my trophy case is that compared to knowing Jesus. The gospel. And so what happens in the life of somebody who's a follower of Jesus is I begin to see it in my life. I begin to see how my accomplishments, I validate me with them. It's just crap compared to knowing Jesus. And what happens for me, okay, it's not that I then say don't accomplish. Oh my gosh, Paul, as a follower of Jesus, accomplishes more than anybody. It's just that the focus of those accomplishments changes. First of all, the focus of the accomplishments is not the building of my name, it's the building of the name of Christ. This is why Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 26 this. Do you have the verse up there? Yes, Lord, walking in your ways of your laws, we wait for you. Your name and your renown are the desire of our heart. Not my name, not my fame, your name and your renown are the desires of our heart. That's what we live for, your fame. I want people to know about you. And all of a sudden, my accomplishments aren't so that people will validate me. My accomplishments are to build his name and his fame and his kingdom and his glory. And so all of a sudden, it's an effort. And this is really, it's hard because I know how it is when you get done with something, you're just like, listen, I just want all glory to go to God. And it's hard not to sound weird and vain saying that. But the point is that I no longer care if I get the credit or not. Boy, that's hard. Because I'm telling you, I get down off the stage, I still want to be validated. I still want people to say, man, you're great. That was cool. I was so blessed. I get validated. But I start realizing that in me is this deal, and I need to just start being aware that the cross is the ultimate accomplishment. I run to that, and I begin to see my accomplishments for his fame and then also for his kingdom, meaning that I am very intentional, and this is big for some of us. I am very intentional to start finding ways to use the things that God has enabled me to use those in ways to build his church or to live the gospel in culture. I mean, for me right now, this is one of the ways it looks. I am running tournaments for the Eureka Sports Association. Working my tail off on these tournament weekends. I am about to send out pleas that we will pray that it will not rain on tournament weekend, because all heck breaks loose and it's brutal. But I chose to do that because I love baseball, I love umpiring, I love being around that. And what's happening in my life is I am now hanging around all these people that are down there around the Eureka Sports Association, especially the umpires, and I'm building a relationship with them. My goal is just to have gospel relationships. It doesn't mean I'm always looking them right in the eye and, hey, you're an umpire, let me tell you about Jesus. I mean, it's not like that yet. I hope someday I'll be able to have those conversations. But my whole purpose for doing this is to take something that I have had accomplishments in, but to use those in a way that are for building his kingdom somehow. My point is, wherever you've had accomplishments, I want to challenge you to find some place in your life, whether it's in your career, whatever, some place in your life where you can use those for the kingdom of God, in his church, with us, or out in the world where it's really gospel-centered. You may be like really good at building and with your hands, and maybe you just need to go build a wheelchair ramp for a lady, whatever it is. I could go on and on and tell you, you need to find that in your life. But whatever it is, that those first two questions, what is it that you have trophies that you want to hold up? What is it that you're running to? How does that look in your life when you see the cross as the ultimate achievement? And how does that look in your life when you realize I need to do whatever this is in my life so that people look to Jesus and think he is famous, he is beautiful, he is awesome? And how does that look in my life if I'm using that to build the kingdom of God? That's the eyes of faith. That's living the gospel with achievement. I don't become dark and black and just blow it off, no more achievement. But now it's not for me. It's like 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whatever you do it all for the glory of God. And I think that's the question Solomon raises that the gospel answers, and my challenge for you this morning. As I close this morning, I'm going to pray, but I'm just going to give you just a few minutes of silence as I walk off and the band walks on, for you to search your heart and just deal with Solomon's words, the monotony. Nobody's going to remember. It's not enough. And the cross as the ultimate achievement. Lord, we love you. We praise you. Thank you for the gospel. In your name I pray. Amen.